Underwriting helps make this community radio station possible.
The WERU Winter Showcase will return for a second year on Saturday, February 18th. We are proud to announce.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of the Towns here on WERU. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works, to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns is produced with support from Cooperative Extension, the major educational outreach program of the University of Maine, with offices statewide. Cooperative Extension puts knowledge to work with the people of Maine and, like WERU, whose mission is to be a voice of many voices, operates out of a sense that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in the studio and you who are listening create a dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. I hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. I'm Ron Beard from University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and glad to welcome you to Talk of the Towns this morning. Our topic this morning is islands and housing. And that's a great topic because I think we all think about housing issues along the coast of Maine and how people are slowly being displaced from their communities by folks who are coming from somewhere else and bidding up the cost of housing. We've got some folks in the studio who can help us with that topic. Allison Mayo, welcome to you, Allison. Allison is an island fellow on the island of Islesborough, and she works with the Island Institute. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Terry Kelly. Terry is director of the Mount Desert Island and Ellsworth Housing Authorities, and we'll learn a little bit more about that. Terry, welcome back.
Good morning, Ron. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back.
Allison, maybe you can start out. First of all, most people will have heard of the Island Institute, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about that as the kind of your host, institutional host.
Okay. The Island Institute is a nonprofit based in Rockland, Maine, and it helps to sustain Maine's year-round communities, islands, and focusing a lot on the working waterfront, helping to gain access to that. And they do a number of other things with education. And housing now is a big area. And they look at balancing the environment with people and taking that all into consideration.
Great. And the Island Fellows Program is relatively new. Maybe you could describe that. How did you come to be interested in serving as an Island Fellow?
Well, when I was finishing up my master's project, I was looking around to see what was out there, and it was about the only thing that caught my eye and the only thing I applied for, so it was good that I was accepted. It places recent graduates of undergrad and graduate school programs on islands and in coastal communities that have trouble funding a lot of different aspects of it. They can apply for a fellow if they want help at a school. Like, there have been a number of fellows on the Vinyl Haven School. There's one out there right now, Allie Day, working on technology. And we have fellows working on small businesses, as Jeremy Gabrielson is based in Machias. There's fellows working on geographic imaging systems on Vinyl Haven. There's Sean Gambrell and his wife Stacy's doing the same thing on North Haven. So there's a wide variety of topics that the fellows cover, and it's amazing just what we all do when we get together just to hear what everyone else has done. There's even librarians and working at historical societies. So.
Great. Well, in some ways, the Island Fellows Program is maybe filling in a few of the little tiny gaps that are beginning to appear on island communities where the island communities might not have all of the people that they need to do the kinds of things that Island Fellows are doing.
Exactly.
Well, talk a little bit about Islesboro. That's where you're based. Did you pick Islesboro? Did they pick you? How did that all work?
I believe they've changed the application process since the year I applied. When I applied, we wrote a personal statement on what our interests were, and they chose basically where we were going. I ended up on Islesboro and actually changed the group that I began with, and about a year ago started working with affordable housing. The group out there is Islesboro Affordable Property, and they have existed since the community in their comprehensive plan survey in the late 80s, determined that affordable housing was a major need on the island, and so the town supported it, and Islesboro Affordable Property formed because of that, and it's a nonprofit, but it does have some, you know, support from the town because it recognizes the problem. And Islesboro has a Ruthie James subdivision, which is has 8 units, and there are 8 houses that are owned by individuals, and the land is actually leased. So it's set up similar to a community land trust where the land is held with the community so that it can't become part of the speculative market. People aren't going to make money off of the property, which seems to be the big problem with housing is the land prices are so high. And when you take that out of the equation, it keeps the price of housing down. And so people that wouldn't be able to have a house are able to do that. And they own the house. They own any improvements or that they make to the land. So that's the program that's been in place for a number of years. And there's also a rental unit on Islesboro. And we have a number of new projects that we're starting.
Okay. And I understand that one of the things that you decided to do maybe a year ago is to try to bring all the islands together and talk about their housing issue.
Right. All of the islands seem
And we say all of the islands. How many inhabited islands?
The Institute focuses on 15 year-round, including 2 that are part of the town of Cranberry Isles. It's made up of Great Cranberry and Islesford, so that's where they get the 15. So there are islands in Casco Bay, Penobscot Bay, and then down east. So part of my fellowship was to visit a lot of the islands. Some of them, you know, there aren't that many people that live on them, and they decided maybe not to include some of them. So I visited a number of them this summer. I still have not been out to Monhegan yet. And I'm pulling together profiles of the islands along with a resource manual that with topics that the islanders requested, because this is, you know, it's going to be dictated by the islanders. I want to put specifically what they wanted in it, sort of examples of deed restrictions, resale formulas, bylaws, that kind of material. So that will be hopefully coming out prior to the symposium, which is at the end of April, so that people can look at that and learn from that before they attend.
Great. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the symposium in a little while so everyone can learn about how to deal with housing issues. I want to bring Terry Kelly into the conversation. Terry, you're the director of the Mount Desert Island and Ellsworth Housing Authorities, and you helped kind of spark some real interest in this last fall at the Governor's Conference on Affordable Housing. We'll come to that in a minute. But first of all, what's a housing authority? How does that fit into this picture of housing on islands, or in your case, an island that's bridged to the mainland and a mainland community?
Well, Ron, the MDI and Ellsworth Housing Authorities is a consortium of 5 authorities that was built back in the early 70s. All of the housing authorities that the town of Bar Harbor, the town of Southwest Harbor, the town of Mount Desert, the town of Tremont, and the city of Ellsworth were very small. And the only way that they could effectively operate was to join together and hire one staff that would do maintenance to administration. The Mount Desert Island and Ellsworth Housing Authorities, although it is really not the Mount Desert Island and Ellsworth Housing Authorities, are all separate ones, but that is what we call ourselves under the letterhead. We provide housing for about 300 seniors and disabled and families, and we have another 375 rental assistance vouchers that we provide. We also do some private management. We have another 30-plus units out in the community that we manage for other owners. And in the mid to late 90s, The Housing Authority shifted some of its focus from the low-income population to the underserved median-income population. And in that, we developed what was West Ede Meadows, which I spoke of the last time I was here at WERU. And simply put, it was a shared equity project in which we and the homeowner shared the value of the property and or the cash value of that property. And simply put, it was whatever they put in it, they got back plus any appreciation, and everything the Housing Authority invested, they got back plus any appreciation should the home be sold within 30 years. And what's interesting about this, it is a model that can pretty much be used about anywhere.
Mm.
And so that's...
So the Housing Authority is really one of the – it's the kind of end user of our federal housing and urban development monies that Congress appropriates, and it comes down to in some ways to a housing authority.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. The dollars are appropriated by Congress, and then they're dispersed by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and some of that money goes to the state. Some of that money goes directly to a housing authority, which is a quasi-municipal agency, much the same as like a transit authority. We do for the town, what the town perhaps doesn't have capacity to do.
Mm. Well, let's pick up where Allison left off. Allison said she didn't get to Monhegan, but you did this last summer, and that kind of opened your eyes in some in really great ways. Tell us about your Monhegan trip. This was a vacation trip. This wasn't officially, you know, your job, but you began to see some connections.
Absolutely. My wife and I her sisters and some good friends decided to spend a week on Monhegan after visiting last fall or the fall previous. And during that time, one thing led to another, and we entered into some conversations with other people on the island. And it was obvious that they were going through the same pains that we on Mount Desert Island were going through and had we had started working on some solutions. And the wonderful folks at Monhegan, they have a problem perhaps which is maybe a little bit more unique than we in Mount Desert Island, in that on Mount Desert Island, you can certainly find property for sale, even if it is expensive. The folks on Monhegan, they have such little land to work with that anything that becomes for sale becomes very expensive very quickly. And I remember being in the Black Duck one day, and there were two ladies speaking, and they were in a conversation about another home on the island that was coming up for sale. And I remember distinctly the lady said, well, I heard that the bidding is going to start at $600,000. And I thought to myself, the bidding is going to start at $600,000. Where is this leading to? Mm-hmm. And the other lady said, well, if the bidding is going to start for $600,000 for hers, it's going to start at $800,000 for mine. Mm-hmm. And obviously, numbers like that make it impossible for a year-round community that is trying to survive and prosper. It's just... is out of the reach of the average worker.
Mm-hmm. You're tuned to Talk of the Towns here on WERU. It's a call-in program. If you'd like to give us a call and ask a question or offer your comment, feel free to do so. The number is 1-866-625-9378 or 469-0500. In the studio with us are Terry Kelly of the MDI Housing Authorities and Allison Mayo, an island fellow on the island of Islesboro, working with the Island Institute. Terry, so you took this information and you kind of, and because you knew that the governor had an annual conference, you kind of said, let's focus on islands.
Exactly. And prior to that, I made a trip to Augusta. Mm. And I was speaking with our representative, Ted Kaufman. And I tried to develop in my mind some type of formula that I thought was fair perhaps as a resale tax or a local option tax. I didn't really know what to call it. And I asked Ted for some assistance, and he said, well, let's go with it and see what happens. And that was developed a little bit out of the Island Housing Trust as well.
Better describe that and maybe make reference to MDI tomorrow as you talk about the Island Housing Trust, which is a nonprofit on Mount Desert Island.
Exactly.
And you serve on their board.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And during those discussions, it was at that time thought that perhaps if there was a some type of local option on real estate that would perhaps even 1%.
So that's a tax that people would pay on the sale of their property that would go directly to support some form of affordable or housing assistance in a local area.
Correct. And when we went to Augusta with this, of course, not being familiar with the bureaucracy, it was like, there is no way this is going to happen. And I couldn't figure it out. I said, why? Here is a community that is more than willing to pay that in order to keep a vibrant year-round lifestyle on Mount Desert Island. And here you are in Augusta, and these folks are looking at you like there is no way this is going to happen. So it was like, okay, well, if that's the case, then really what we need is more people and more interest, and get the word out so that folks realize there are people who are trying to do something about this, but it is very difficult. And the solution, or part of the solution, is definitely going to have to come from legislation in Augusta.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of then learned perhaps about Allison's work, about trying to put a symposium together, and somehow you got together and had a whole track called Islands in Crisis.
Yes. At that point, it was like, well, we need to get more people involved, so we might as well go to the islands. And because obviously Mount Desert Island being part of that. And I had a couple of conversations with Allison early on. And we met out on the island, and she showed me what was going on. And I mentioned to her that there was a conference coming up, and perhaps we could get enough people involved so that they would pay some attention. Mm. And we were lucky enough to have state legislators that attended that the Islands in Crisis conference. It was really what the focus was all was for. And Allison was instrumental in trying to get the outer islands involved in this, and some of the agencies of the Genesis Fund, the Maine Communities Foundation, the Island Institute, and several other organizations to come to the table.
Great. Allison, what was that like for you, kind of hearing that there was going to be a state conference and maybe to get some focus on island housing issues?
I was very happy to hear that, because just knowing all the issues with the islands, the higher cost of living out there, and trying to get the message out about that, because a lot of funders don't want to give money because they think islanders are rich because the houses are so expensive and maybe their salaries, you know, they don't match up with, they can't afford the houses out there to purchase them, and the transportation costs with the ferries and fuel and food and everything costs more. And the Maine Islands Coalition, which the Island Institute helps them to meet and supports them, but they're their own organization. They meet quarterly, and they have legislators come and speak about issues. They talk about all the problems that have or challenges that have come up on the islands. And so I knew that was a good way to let them know about this. And they also have an affordable housing subcommittee, and to get everyone there involved, because the Maine Islands Coalition has a representative from each of Maine's year-round unbridged islands. So that's a good starting point. And, you know, that's one of the things, is we just want to get people to know what's going on. If legislation comes up, people in other parts of Maine aren't aware of the problems on the coast, but especially on the islands. And so if there's any way to, you know, get the word out, so that if legislation ever does come up, so that people know that the issues, so they don't just think people are, you know, playing favorites or whatever. It's just hard to be in Northern Maine and vote for something that will support islands.
Let's stop then and talk about what you see as the long-term impact of these trends in terms of housing prices. What would that do if the trends continue without some kind of assistance? What would that do to a place like Islesboro?
the people, the year-round people are already having to move off the island, or people that want to move out there can't move out there because there are people from, you know, different economies coming in, people from larger cities that have the money, and they're driving the prices up. Right now, Islesboro has 9 applicants and possibly being able to set up 2 houses this coming year. So, you know, that's 7.
What kinds of people are trying to either stay on islands or trying to move to islands that would be helpful to the community?
Well, one couple is one person is a teacher, the other one's a carpenter. Another couple, the husband works at the ferry, the wife works at the post office. You know, these people sustain the communities. We need them out there. And if they leave, you know, the communities are going to fall apart. And we also need the children to stay out there. And if they move away, or if the parents move away, the kids move away, and the schools end up closing, and then it becomes a summer community. So, it's pretty drastic what could happen. And on some of the smaller islands, or on Cranberry Isles, I believe, the headcount in December, there were 53 people on Great Cranberry, tending towards the older end of the spectrum, and a 3-year-old and a newborn are out there. And if, you know, just thinking of some of these communities, if the younger people move away, and they're having problems with jobs out there too, on these islands, 1 or 2 families gone is devastating. So it's not just, you know, looking at the big picture. You have to just think of one family at a time.
So it isn't just housing. It's really whole community vitality that you're addressing. Housing is one component.
Right. It's all interconnected, and it's unfortunate that we have to, that we do split it up. But to focus on it, on housing, we sort of need to divide it up a little bit, but we know that the economics is tied in and hope to work it in somehow.
Terry, tell us a little bit about the Island Housing Trust on Mount Desert Island and the case they built at the beginning, and now they're moving forward on actually providing some housing. But what was the case they tried to make to people to support the creation of the Island Housing Trust around the community, the vitality of the community?
It started back with MDI Tomorrow, and we had a situation which I think everybody was aware of, and that was that the cost of housing was just spiraling out of control. And it, I believe it was the Mount Desert Island Trust or
something
like that.
They called it the Community Trust, yes.
In the beginning. And then they realized that the issue really is island-wide. And they changed the name into Island Housing Trust to encompass all of the different towns on the island. And they've been really working hard in trying to get a director. Mm-hmm. They have Chris Spruce now, a great director, so to take this from a volunteer base into something that's a little bit more formal. Mm-hmm. It certainly keeps the record a lot easier for everybody to track as to what they've been working on and how they're working on that. They looked at several pieces of land in the very beginning trying to decide if housing was built, could it be built on this site? Could it be built on that site? What were the benefits and what were the drawbacks to the cost because of the topography perhaps of the property? And now they have decided to work on the Ripples Pond Tract, which is a piece of property owned in the, or belongs to the town of Mount Desert, that years ago was set aside to do some type of affordable housing for islanders. And, in fact, I believe that was a piece of property granted by the Rockefellers, although I'm not really sure about that. And now that they have actually decided on a piece of property, they're going gangbusters after it.
Let's go back, though. What was the case that they made? They built a case around island life and really the volunteers in the community as well as the workforce. They were saying that if we don't pay attention to housing, we're not going to have people volunteering at the hospital, volunteering at the schools, volunteering for the fire department. It was those kinds of people. It wasn't – I mean, I think they were very much aligned with what's happening on smaller islands.
That's absolutely correct. There was a poster that was floating around a while ago, I remember seeing, that had a picture of a fireman, and it said that I'm a fireman for this community, but I can't afford to live here. And that's something that I absolutely, the whole coast is going through right now. And in fact, there is a movement right now to find a coordinator that will look at all of these nonprofits and try to come up with a volunteer base. And I think they were trying to do that with maybe an AmeriCorps volunteer, and which would be absolutely fantastic because there is a very small population. And maybe that's the largest problem outside of the housing issue is that all of the islands, even the island of Mount Desert, have a very small population to do a tremendous amount of work. And whether that or to keep the community vitality up, I guess maybe is a better way of putting it. And if you take an unbridged island, that problem is even worse. And it's like Allison said, if you take just one family out of that mix, well, that family may also have been involved in several of nonprofit pieces where they sat on anything from a school board to the warrant committee to whatever. The population base just is not there.
Mm. So I'll just list our phone numbers one more time because we've been talking about some great topics here. 1-866-625-9378 if you'd like to participate in this morning's conversation about islands and housing. Our guests are Allison Mayo, an island fellow on the island of Islesboro, and Terry Kelly, who is the director of the MDI Housing Authorities. As you came out of the governor's conference on affordable housing and you called the track that you were focusing on islands in crisis, that was back in November. What were some of the highlights, Allison, for you? What do you remember about the buzz that came out of that particular conference?
Well, what struck me the most was when I went into the first session in the morning, I went in right as it was starting, and the room was packed. And we had hoped to get maybe 25 people, and we had, I'd say, at least – we had over 60 or – more that morning, and just to see that many people actually cared about these issues that we were working hard on was really nice. And at the end of the day, when we were talking about, you know, next steps or what we were going to do, and just to see the interests of everybody and that people really wanted to actually do something about it instead of just talking about it.
Mm-hmm. There were a number of different tracks. Do you remember some of the tracks or the subjects that you dealt with? You dealt with, seems to me it was policy issues.
Right.
Some of the things that Terry was talking about, is there a way to get tax policy that would support it? You talked about some of the practical things of how to put a housing trust together. What else?
Land conservation.
The bridge between land conservation and housing, because
right.
Sometimes people see those in conflict. And,
right. And long-term affordability was a big one, and that's really important, as Terry saw out on Monhegan, when there's such little land on these unbridged islands. When something becomes available to have as affordable housing, you need to keep it as affordable housing. And if it's lost, then it's lost. And if there might not be any other options, like on Peaks, they don't really have any more land left. So if they find something, they need to keep it affordable long term, either deed restrictions or just something, or community land trust. There are a lot different options, but that's something that the unbridged islands especially are focusing on because it's a necessity out
mm-hmm.
there.
You also, as at that session, showed a wonderful video that framed the issues that we're talking about here very nicely, and that was put together by the Genesis Fund. Tell us a little bit about that group, if you can, Allison.
The Genesis Community Loan Fund, the reason that the islands have really come to know them is because of the Islands Challenge Fund that they have. People can check out Genesis's website. They've got information on that, and it gives money for projects on the unbridged islands that are working on projects, especially on housing and then other community, a lot of building projects, and they also offer support in helping to set up nonprofits and that sort of thing. But it's the fund recognized the need to help the islands because they are having such problems getting federal funding because we don't always meet housing and urban development, the HUD standards for the counties, because it does cost more to live on the islands. It appears that people make too much money and they don't fall into low income, where on the islands it might be moderate income, but because of how expensive it is, they're actually low income. But HUD doesn't see it that way, and that's another reason the Affordable Housing Subcommittee of the Islands Coalition is working to develop a document to prove this with hard facts to go out to funders.
Mm. Terry, you were particularly interested in the, you know, the kind of the policy angles. Your experience with meeting with Representative Kaufman and saying he believes it's a good idea, but he hasn't been able to get some of his fellow legislators to believe it's a good idea. What do you think came out of the island Islands in Crisis track in terms of policy initiative?
Well, Ron, I think number one, walking into the conference in that morning, it was obvious that the folks there were willing to go to work. Unlike many conferences that I've attended where you kind of look through the agendas of all the different meetings and you kind of pick one here and pick one there, the people there were there for a purpose. And they were definitely willing to work. The networking was extremely strong. And those folks who were there were bodies willing to go to Augusta. You know, they were there to say, you know, we've got an issue, we've got a problem. Our land is so valuable and so desirable that it is very difficult for us who are year-rounders or residents or however you want to put it to keep pace. And I don't think there was a person at that conference that wouldn't have just marched right out at that time and said, you know, listen, guys, we may only be a couple hundred strong, but we're all connected with this. When I went to Augusta that day, I remember hearing the real estate lobby who kind of opposed what we were saying, you know, stating that the real estate business was booming and this is something that one of the only businesses that is thriving, and doing something like this could be the same thing as the luxury tax they put on the boats back in the 90s. I think it was the 90s. And I was like, you know what? This is all connected. People do not come to Maine, let me rephrase that. People from Rhode Island do not come to Maine to see homes owned by people from Connecticut.
So if there's no there, people aren't going to come anymore. So it's connected.
Absolutely. Right. Maine is what it is on the coast because of its working waterfront. And that is really in jeopardy. I remember I was at Ray's Barbershop in Bar Harbor one day, and a van pulled up out front, and a gentleman got out, and he came inside and said, I've been coming to Bar Harbor for 10 years, and any new place to go to lunch or for dinner? And we kind of gave him some ideas. And the next thing you know, he said, this will probably be my last year coming here. And he said, because the working waterfront, for the most part, is gone. And I can see every bit of what I see right here on Cape Cod and save myself 12 hours of driving.
That's a great story. You're tuned to Talk of the Towns here on WERU. Our guests in the studio are Terry Kelly of the MDI and Ellsworth Housing Authorities and Allison Mayo of the Island Institute, and she's an Island Fellow on Islesboro. Well, I'll list our phone numbers one more time because I'm sure that there are some of you out there listening who have a story to tell about islands and housing. 1-866-625-9378 or 469-0500. I believe we have Barbara Stanton from Cranberry Isles on the line with us. Welcome to Talk of the Towns, Barbara.
Good morning, Ron.
What's the conditions on Cranberry Island this morning?
Well, absolutely gorgeous, you know. Very quiet, but lovely.
Great. Well, for our listeners, just describe the Cranberry Isles. There are two islands that make up the municipality, I suppose you'd say, of Cranberry Isles.
Well, actually, there are five islands.
Okay.
And, only two are inhabited in the wintertime. So you have to look at this as winter population versus summer population. But Great Cranberry, which is where I live, and Islesford, or Little Cranberry, are the only two of the five that are inhabited full-time in the winter. And we have a population on Islesford of about 75 to 80 inhabitants, and I think Allison gave a head count of 52 on our island. I always have trouble coming up with the extra 15. I end up with about 35. But anyway, it's maximum 50.
Uh-huh.
And it's not very many people.
And those who are working, where do they work? What kinds of jobs would they be engaged in?
We have the postmistress. We have two working boatyards, who I guess there's a total of about 6 to 8 employees there, and we have one active lobster fisherman and a builder, and the rest are, I've probably forgotten somebody critical. Oh, there's the boat company, and the ferry company has employees. But most of the rest of the folks are either retired or working on their own.
Self-employed.
Yes.
Right. And what's the school situation there now?
The school is temporarily closed. We haven't had any school children for the last 4 or 5 years, and this is a great worry to us. And figuring that as the population grows older, and it's not replaced with an active younger age group, the island definitely tends to look like it's going towards summer only, and that's a great fear for those who are still living out here.
And you began to think about housing as one of the pieces of the puzzle that you wanted to address. How did you begin to think about housing on the Cranberry Isles?
Well, that happened about 10 years ago when there was an exodus of families with high school and junior high school age children because of the school opportunities and the way the ferry system works. You can't really go to high school and sleep on the island at night. It just is almost impossible. And so that these families just up and moved to the mainland, and all of a sudden we had a great hole, actually. There were a lot of dark houses, and it was sort of frightening. And also the labor pool, the volunteer pool, everything crumbled right around us, and it was a rather sudden disappearance of an active age group on the island.
So you began to think about attracting other folks and making sure that they had the opportunity for housing.
Well, there was a lot of head scratching first.
Okay.
You know, that how this goes, what is going to happen, and secondly, we began to realize that what we needed to do was to get people back out here, especially of a younger, more active age group, and preferably with families. And so we began to, with a great lot of help from the Island Institute, began to look into housing opportunities, and finally came up with the Cranberry Isles Realty Trust, which is our organization, and we were able to do several things. We got organized, first of all. Secondly, we were given a house. Somebody had bought a house that they actually wanted to get rid of. It was quite a good house, actually, and these new owners were persuaded to give it to us, but the proviso was we had to move it from where it was. And so the town on Great Cranberry had some land available and made it possible for us to move the house to that spot. And that gave us the first affordable house that we could consider as a rental property. We were then able to also apply for a CDBG grant, which is a community development block grant, and we got quite a nice substantial grant from them, and were able to purchase with that money another house that was on the market and rehab that, and also purchase for the town of Islesford a sectional house which we had moved to another piece of town property that was available. So we now have 3 houses, and they are all occupied, and up and going.
Oh, that's
feel fortunate.
That's great. And you're not alone, because the Fair Isles over in Scotland are having the same problem. you've heard about
yes,
their
I've
situation.
Heard about this.
Right.
Yes, yes.
Right. And they were actually advertising worldwide for people mm-hmm. to come and live in that community. You haven't reached quite that level yet, but
no.
So what are the challenges ahead that you see? What will you have to keep doing, and how will you keep those properties kind of affordable? At this point, you're renting those properties?
We are renting them. They ostensibly could be sold, but we decided for the moment that we will keep them because the housing pool is slim out here, and most of the houses that become available go very quickly into the upper bracket market. And if you can persuade the seller to sell at a lower price with the intent of keeping the house in the island market pool, so to speak. We've tried to do that, and that's been done once or twice over on Islesford. It has not happened over here on Great Cranberry, but, we're ever hopeful. We're also hopeful that people who decide to put their land in conservation trusts would be willing to split off a small amount and donate that to the Cranberry Isles Realty Trust with the hope of providing a site for someone to build a small affordable house or an apartment for somebody.
Great.
This would be a way of acquiring some land.
And as you think about the whole coast of Maine, you're seeing other experiments and people working together on these issues. You're involved in actually planning the symposium for April.
Yes, that's true.
Great.
And it's amazing how each island comes up with a unique spin on the same problem. But I think it's very refreshing to hear other approaches to these tricky situations.
Right.
And I think we've all learned a tremendous amount from each other. And as I would echo what Terry said about the governor's conference, the islands in crisis was a very encouraging conference, because I've been to lots of them, and this was the first one that I came out of feeling somewhat hopeful that we were in a position to do something.
Great. Barbara, thanks very much for being with us on Talk of the Towns, and good luck to you and your colleagues with the Realty Trust.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay. Barbara Stainton from the Cranberry Isles. She lives on Great Cranberry, talking about their efforts to solve the housing situation on their islands. Give us a call at 1-866-625-9378 with your questions or comments. I'm sure you've got a story to tell about housing and islands, or maybe housing on anywhere in the state of Maine, because I think we're seeing islands as the example, but all of our coastal communities and some of our inland communities are facing these kinds of issues. Let's talk a little bit about the symposium that you, Terry Kelly and Allison May are helping to plan for the end of April. Allison, your idea was to bring islanders together to talk about these issues.
Right. Well, at first, it started out as one of the goals of my fellowship. It was just written in there as a possibility. Originally, I thought it would just be the unbridged islands. And then after meeting Terry Kelly and helping with the islands in crisis, it just sort of took off. And I feel very positive about that. And we have a lot of interest and a lot of organizations that are in it now, and there's so many islanders that are helping to plan it that it's turned out a lot better than I imagined, and I'm getting a lot more help than I thought I would. So it's looking good.
Good. What are some of the details? Where is it? When is it? And we'll come to one of the speakers.
Okay. It will be at the Hutchinson Center in Belfast on Friday, April 28th, in the evening. We're going to have a dinner and keynote address. And then Saturday, from possibly 8 to around 2:30 or 3. And hopefully that will allow some islanders to get back to their ferries. We'll be focusing on success stories on the islands. We'll have a panel with islanders from some of the bridged and unbridged islands talking about their stories and what they've done. And we're going to have breakout sessions on the Land Conservation Affordable Housing Link, fundraising, financing, long-term affordability. And we're planning to have islanders at each of those, or one islander that can talk about how they address that on their island, along with maybe another speaker who will give maybe a general overview of it. And so we're hoping that islanders can leave with tools to actually enact some of these things instead of, just leaving and how you leave most conferences, mm-hmm. but to take it home and really, really do something about mm-hmm. it.
Well, you've got a wonderful keynote speaker for Friday evening, and I think he'll be there the rest of the day on Saturday, John Abrams from the island of Martha's Vineyard. And John has just written a book called, what's the name of the book? It's called
The Company We Keep.
The Company We Keep, and it's about his South Mountain Builders, right. Which is used to be a private company, but now is a worker-owned company. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, it's all of the issues that Martha's Vineyard has faced, perhaps for a longer period of time from Main Islands, but the same kinds of trends and how they are working collaboratively with local government, with their tax policies, their real estate community to really solve the problem of housing.
Right. They've really looked at it and from a number of different angles. And so that will be good for all the islanders to hear of and to see success on another island. And of course there, Martha's Vineyard, we're hoping we don't see something like that on a lot of these unbridged islands. And to just hear what he's done, and he wants to sort of have a closing session too, where he's going to attend the conference and also learn about what's going on in the islands and try to pull it all together for everybody. So
I remember one of his stories. He came and actually kind of inspired the folks on Mount Desert Island, Terry, as I recall. And he told about moving old houses to a used house lot until they could be, till a place could be created. So they actually had a place the town had set aside, and you could kind of park your old house there until the town could find a place to turn it into affordable housing. Right. Great stories, great stories. We do have a call here on Talk of the Towns. Go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Hi there, Ron. This is Eric Henry over in Southwest Harbor.
Great to have you on Talk of the Towns, Eric.
You have a good program. I thank you for that. I only caught part of this, but I guess the little bit of info that I pass on is an idea that I have proffered to the MDI Tomorrow Group and the Island Housing Trust here on MDI. I believe that in order to solve this problem, we're going to have to come at it from every possible approach you can think of. But also, I believe you're going to have some incredibly what I call artificial means entered into the program. And the one that I see as the quickest and most viable is for us to raise a lot of money and start buying every house you can buy in these communities. Mm. And it means buying them at whatever price they're going for, unfortunately. And then you turn around and you have some sort of system where you register people that need housing, and you see who's qualified, and you maybe do a lottery system like they do down there in the vineyard. But then you sell them off to people that need to live in the community and work at a lower price than you paid, and you throw the difference away.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they want to move, change, that house comes back through the trust, whatever organization it is, and is passed on to somebody else. At some sort of a price. But that, to me, is the quickest and simplest and fastest way to start putting some houses in the hands of these working people, because all you have to do is have an office that's buying and then qualifying and selling.
Right. And I remember you saying to the Mount Desert Island community that, just based on your experience over the years in Southwest Harbor, that if we didn't come up with something like 500 houses, we were going to see a real erosion in the lifeblood of our community.
We're seeing it already. Every school on the island now is dropping in population, not precipitously, but everyone is dropping.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the board here, school board at Pemetic, for 12 years. We've gone from 270 now we're down just under 200.
Mm.
And I don't see any rise happening because nobody can come. The other thing that's changing, that I believe will change in our population of school children, is that the population won't be a an incredible mix that it is now of people that are born and raised here and people from away, it's going to be more and more people from away.
Mm.
You're going to have students in our schools that are more and more from families of higher incomes because they're the only ones that can live here.
Mm-hmm.
And it will suck the lifeblood out of the community eventually. There's no question about it. It will dramatically change.
So the taking your idea, I think, then the Mount Desert Island Tomorrow process and eventually the Island Housing Trust commissioned a study that would then kind of bore out your figures and came up with a price tag. And I think they came up with something like a fund of $20 million.
Yep. It's going to be a lot of money.
So what would it take, do you think, to convince people who have that kind of money to turn it over to this wonderful cause? What's the argument that you think will be most effective?
Well, that fellow that I heard you talking about who came to Bar Harbor and said, there's no longer a working waterfront here, why should I bother driving 12 hours to get here? People like that have to be convinced that if they like the community the way it is, kind of down home and folksy and, you know, the wharfs and the boats and the lobstermen and stuff, if they want that, they're going to have to ante up to keep it because otherwise it is just rapidly disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And
What about the summer community? All of the islands that we've been talking about so far here on the coast of Maine have a substantial summer community who do have means. What will convince them, do you think, to support these kinds of efforts?
Well, to me, it's that argument of what they want the community to be like. And secondly, if they want people to wait on them, serve them, and work for them, caretakers, electricians, gardeners, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them driving onto this island every day. And the further and further they have to go to live, the more and more money that's going to cost all these people to maintain their houses.
Mm.
I see a day when I as a contractor will have a line item on my bill that says transportation.
Well,
and it'll be a huge number because I'm bringing people from, you know, by Millinocket to work down here.
And if you talk with John Abrams from Martha's Vineyard, you know, there is a substantial add-on cost because they're flying over. They're not driving to the island that they work on. They're having to fly over.
That's right. And that's even more expensive than driving from, say, Millinocket or Bangor.
Right. Yep. Well, Eric, thanks very much for your call this morning.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the program.
Okay. Appreciate everyone's comments this morning. 469-0500 or toll-free 1-866-625-9378 as we talk about islands and housing in general on Maine's coast. And we have our guests in the studio who can help us with that topic, Terry Kelly, who's the director of the MDI and Ellsworth Housing Authorities, and Allison Mayo, who's an island fellow on the island of Islesboro. What are you hoping that will result from the symposium in April? Allison, you talked about tools. Terry, how about the policy angle? How do we begin to make the laws in our state that will allow communities to begin taxing themselves? Henry's suggestion was to have donation, but there's also the mechanism of taxing ourselves. What will it take to create that kind of policy?
I think, Ron, we're going to have to increase awareness about the problem. As I said earlier, this is all connected, and if folks want to come to the coast of Maine, or maybe anywhere in Maine now, I guess, because I think Greenville's probably going through the same growing pains. They need to know right up front that everybody has to give a little bit, and by give I mean look at the not just say no to a local option real estate tax, but to really look at it. And not have their mind set before the meeting even starts. We need to flesh out ideas that can be developed into solutions. And those solutions really need to be comprehensive. When we go to the legislature, we need to know exactly what the problem is in a way that we can relate it to them so that they can look and see what we're trying to do or what that solution actually is and say, you know, by golly, that probably very well might work. And we need to give it some a fair shake.
Mm. Allison, I think islands have a special kind of ability to see the future maybe more clearly than folks on the mainland because they're smaller in some ways. They're both more resilient because they've had to deal with all of the difficulties of island life, but they're also more fragile. Say a little bit more about that if you can.
Yeah, well, they're affected by small changes. It's really noticeable, like we were talking earlier about when one family moves away. And because of that, I think they're fighting harder to keep the community together. And I mean, one thing that I've really noticed on Islesboro is just the really strong community, how everybody's really close, and people, you know everyone. And there's about 600 people year-round on Islesboro, so it's one of the larger islands, but it's just, it's really nice. It's a nice feeling to be in a community like that. It, you know, when I was growing up in Hamden, Maine, our neighborhood used to be like that. And around the state, that's changing. But out, you know, on these islands, it's just so strong. And I think a lot of it is because of all these obstacles they face and all these challenges. And, you know, they have to do it if they want to survive. Not only are they, you know, paying higher costs for to live, but it's a challenge also to live out there. If you have an appointment on the mainland, you lose a day's pay because you have to take the day off. There are just so many barriers that it takes a lot of dedication to be an islander.
Mm. And this notion that it sounds like the kind of community that you're describing is a community that most people would want to live in, whether it's on an island or on the mainland. It's a community that thinks about itself as a community and tries to fill in those gaps. And it seems like we're dealing with the larger trend, which is terms of make money today. And it's not about thinking about the future. And the work that you're both doing is asking people to think about the future. Is that a hard case, or is that a hard sell, Terry?
I think that it's an absolute fact. And I have to look at some of the leaders on Mount Desert Island, people willing to stand up and say, you know, we need to make a change here. And I commend folks like Byron Butler, who stood up to the plate and said, by golly, we need to do something here. And when he took the when he was part of convincing the town of Mount Desert to use the Ripples Pond Tract, not only did he ask for a vote for the townspeople to do it, but he said, you know what, this vote needs to be unanimous.
And was it?
And by golly, it was. It was a unanimous vote from everybody at the special town meeting. It was fantastic.
Mm. So that kind of leadership is needed in all our communities. And Allison, just list the details about the conference in case we have listeners here. How would they learn about the details of the conference and perhaps attend?
Well, we're still pulling together the details, and we don't have an application yet. But people can email me at amayo at islandinstitute.org, and I can get back to them. And the symposium will take place Friday, April 28th, and Saturday, April 29th at Hutchinson Center in Belfast, Maine.
Great. So last question for each of you, fairly briefly. What's your vision of success? What would it look like if we were to come back in 10 or 15 years and things were going well? What would you want to people to see? Based on the work that you're doing around island housing. Allison?
I would say, you know, housing options available for all year rounders who want to stay on the islands, just a strong community with people not having to go off, and the housing staying affordable in perpetuity.
Mm. Terry, what's your vision of success?
If I could leave the conference in April and come back 10 years from now, it would be wonderful to see these small communities with year-round vibrant economies.
And housing as a part of that.
And housing as a part of that.
Great. Well, I want to thank you both for sharing this hour here on Talk of the Towns. We've come to that time when I want to remind you that this program was produced with support from Cooperative Extension and the Hancock County Extension Association. With offices in each county, Cooperative Extension is the major educational outreach program of the University of Maine. Our radio collaboration with WERU began in 1990 and continues with your support. Join us on the second Friday at this time for Family Radio Forum, and on the third Friday of each month for Talk of the Towns. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balmain House Highland Music recording. Thanks again to our guests in the studio, Allison Mayo, an Island Fellow with the Island Institute. She's based on Islesboro. Terry Kelly, who's the director of the Mount Desert Island and Ellsworth Housing Authorities, is also on the board of the Island Housing Trust there on Mount Desert Island. And thanks to Barbara Stanton from the Cranberry Isles Realty Trust, who joined us by phone. Let's see. Thanks to our underwriters. Thanks to Amy Brown, who is our new news director here at WERU for engineering our program. And stay tuned for On the Wing. This is Ron Beard, your host for Talk of the Towns, wishing you a good morning.
When Rachel Dwoskin graduated from college, she went to Beijing to work in public relations. She was there for less than 2 months when...
Basically, I was at a party one night in Beijing, and this young, handsome Chinese guy came up to me and said, "You're white. Do you want to be in my friend's soap opera?" And that was it. The Chinese soap opera, Foreign Babes in Beijing, gave me two kind of unusual opportunities. The first one was to be an American temptress and a homewrecker who falls in love with a Chinese guy and ruins his life by taking him back to America and sacrifices everything for true love herself when she agrees to marry him. And the second opportunity, which was slightly less titillating, but